Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio of WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Noah Rothman, author of The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. Noah, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Who are these New Puritans, and why did you want to write a book about them?
They are, as I describe, not Democrats, not liberals, not even all progressives. A particular sort of puritanically inclined progressive is who I write about. It's difficult to quantify exactly what that is, but you know it when you see it because you've encountered it. It's a small band of progressive activists who punch far above their weight and have managed to capture a variety of institutions and impose on them a theory of social organization that extends beyond politics. It mimics a secular religion, but it extends beyond religious practice. It's a way of life, a theory of social organization that has a moral framework associated with it, and a very familiar moral framework, one that is native to progressivism when it was birthed in the heart of mainline Protestant New England. The similarities in tendency and mental habits and mental traits shared by the New Puritan and the progressive left of the 19th century and the puritanical movement of the 1600s and 1700s are very difficult to ignore once you begin to see it. And this book itemizes the ways in which it manifests in all walks of life, the sort of stuff that should be outside of politics.
The big difference, though, between the old Puritans and these new Puritans, I would think, is religion, right? The new ones are secular.
They are secular insofar as there's no deism associated with their moral framework. There's no pathway to absolution for you. But the practice of their political habits is very religious insofar as it has a variety of moral prescriptions to it and moral practices, a series of activities and beliefs that are not distinct from religious practice. It is accompanied by great displays of self-sacrifice, of self-deprivation, of labor in the pursuit of penance, and of zeal in service to the cause to a degree that mimics the sort of religiosity that we saw from the puritanically inclined. And of course, in the progressivism of the 19th century, the kind of Comstockery that prescribed practices that were perceived to corrupt you, corrupt society as a whole, and lead us away from a moral life and the perfection of society. They have a moral dimension to them, which makes them very similar to a religion, albeit without the kind of religious practice and absolution that you get from religious practice. You get the suffering, well, by serving the new puritanical cause, but you don't get any of the absolution from the suffering. The suffering is part of the point.
What's the difference, then, between these new Puritans and the need of any society to enforce moral standards? I'm thinking just conventional rules about don't cuss all the time on your podcast, don't look at pornography, etc. The kinds of social norms that can feel oppressive when they're overdone, overbearing, and so forth, versus what these new Puritans are doing now.
Well, part of the reason why I organized the book chapter by chapter by unimpeachable moral values is part of what you describe there is a reason why I'm in some ways sympathetic to the rediscovery of a very old moral framework for life. The chapters are organized by piety, penance, austerity, temperance, the fear of God, and order. And there's a lot to say for all of these. It is in their practice that we see excesses. But there's parts where I'm completely sympathetic to what the practice of the New Puritans are engaged in, and most notably in the chapter on alcohol and sex, which is temperance. The New Puritans have rediscovered a very old theory of social organization, which is predicated on the understanding that when men and women are together in situations that are bathed in alcohol, things can happen that tear at the social fabric. This is not something that conservatives need to be lectured about. They understand this rather intuitively. In fact, this is how societies have self-perpetuated for generations. It's just that progressives are rediscovering this very old moral code and abandoning the one that their parents and grandparents ascribed to, which emphasized self-gratification, self-satisfaction, even hedonism, at the expense of social cohesion. The new Puritan, the progressive left of our time, is abandoning that moral code, one that that sort of rejected this, the time-honored theory of social organization that maintained healthy boundaries for you and your loved ones and your neighborhood at large in favor of something that we know to work because it does work and has worked in the past. It's just a profound rejection of the moral, the ethos and the moral theory that their parents and grandparents subscribed to.
Noah, your new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, is full of examples. Give us a really striking one of what you mean by this new Puritanism.
Probably I'll just cite one of the silliest ones that illustrates sort of this profound moral theory that has gone awry in the hands of these activists. In the summer of 2020, the nation was rocked by protests and violence in the name of a very defensible principle, the principle being that police should be subordinate to the communities they serve and responsible to the politicians who are elected by the people in those communities. This is an unobjectionable principle. In the practice of the New Puritanism, it was applied not to politics per se, in the arenas in which politics is native, government, law, even educational settings in the workplace. It was applied to art. Notably, there was a movement on the part of this, the people who espoused this unobjectionable principle, to purge from artistic products, reality television and scripted television, the quote, good cop archetype. It was an assumption that even presenting the public with a stylized version of a police officer who was good and noble and just in the pursuit of justice was fueling police violence. There's very little to support this theory, but it actually won out over some rather tangible facts. Shows like Cops and Live PD were canceled, in part because they were thought to be advancing this idea that was leading to police violence. The good these programs had done, solving missing cases, solving cold cases, identifying at-large felons, was subordinated to a theory. The theory won out over the facts. And the silliest manifestation of this was this backlash against the kids' show Paw Patrol. It's this cartoon show featuring cartoon dogs as first responders. That was subject to a mob. The mob wanted it canceled. They demanded that the, quote, class traitors of the Paw Patrol be kept held to justice. And the New York Times reported on this and said it was kind of a joke, but not really. It most certainly wasn't a joke, because the excesses of this display subordinated the principle itself, the principle that was unobjectionable, got subsumed within this big, booming, sanctimonious parade of anxiety and anxious introspection and projecting those insecurities into the outward world to the point where the actual principle itself, going after police violence and perhaps trying to curb the excesses of local police departments and rein them in, make them more responsible to elected officials, that was abandoned in favor of these displays of sanctimony and self-deprivation and taking things away from a larger host of people because they're assumed, it's assumed that you can't handle it. That's just one of many, many examples of you losing something, having something that you like adulterated or prescribed for your own good because a very small band of censorious activists don't think you can handle it.
The Rise of the New Puritans has a subtitle, which is Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. Give us some tips on how ordinary listeners, ordinary Americans, can fight back against these woke Puritans.
Well, one of the things that I offer is a competing paradigm that is much easier to adopt because it's much less onerous and burdensome on you. It is to lead a carefree and joyous life. And one of the ways that you can do that is by reconceptualizing politics as politics. When we talk about politics now, we are mostly talking about things that are political per se, but not necessarily politics. It has nothing to do with legislative affairs or electoral outcomes. It has to do with imposing world historic import on your burrito, because your burrito is derived from a series of forces that are cultural and political and manifest in this little package of values that is really otherwise not political. It's not responsive to legislative affairs. It has nothing to do with politics. But we've imposed political themes on it, which has created in our minds this idea that is inaccurate and leads to fatalism. Because when you have this moral framework that you think is urgent and involves a lot of imperatives, and the system isn't responsive to that because it can't respond in the way you want it to. Legislative affairs do not affect the sort of things that we now describe as politics. It leads to one of two things. You become withdrawn, depressed, despondent, and you back away from the political process entirely, or you radicalize and resolve to attack the foundations of this wholly immoral system because it's not responding as you insist that it should. Indeed, you believe it must in order to be morally virtuous. That is a paradigmatic mistake on the part of the people who have adopted it. And the second is to patronize the individuals and the artists and the creators who are just doing creative work. I sum this up, and this is part of the reason why the old moral strictures fell away. I sum this up in the story of the phrase banned in Boston. The phrase banned in Boston used to be a very effective warning against impure literary experiences. And it was very effective. Well into the 20th century, plays were Baudelaireized, books were banned in the heart of mainline Protestant New England. But eventually that became less a warning against impious literature and an advertisement for it. Publishers actively sought to have their books banned in Boston to increase sales around the country. And the analogy, insofar as I can see one to modern times, is banned on Facebook, banned on Amazon. When conservative books, and they are reliably conservative books, are targeted by the censors in these institutions, their targets of their censorship achieve wild commercial success, disproportionate with the PR campaigns around the product itself. So that commercial pressure will help, I think, do away with this movement with alacrity. But it takes a participation on your part, and part of the participation that I ask of you, which is relatively easy, is to live a joyous life and to ignore the moral exhortations to be miserable, because the people around you are miserable. They want you to be miserable, too. This is a totalitarian practice. You are to be drafted into it, and all you have to do is reject it.
Noah, one more question as we wrap up. You are associate editor of Commentary Magazine. Very quickly, tell us, what is Commentary Magazine and how can listeners learn more about it?
Commentary Magazine is a journal of opinion and analysis, culture and politics. It's been in publication since 1945, uninterrupted. I've been privileged to be there since 2015. It is edited by John Podhoretz and Abe Greenwald. Christine Rosen is a big part of this project. She's a senior writer. We do a podcast on a daily basis. You can check it out at commentary.org, and you can read us there, or you can check us out on our podcast, which is the Commentary Magazine podcast. And you can read me there, and you can also see me on Twitter at Noah C. Rothman.
The author is Noah Rothman. The book is The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. Noah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.